people have done little bits of looking at this lake edge, the Sea of Galilee. And because of the way that the lake is built and the way the lake is formed, there's quite a lot of runoff valleys that go into the lake. So you end up with a kind of amphitheatre on the shore of the lake. So if it was one of these places that Jesus used, he would have been able to speak and be heard by many hundreds, thousands of people. So just imagine that he's getting pushed towards the shore by the crowd of people that are coming to see him. And somebody, one of the disciples maybe, says, right, well, get in the boat, because they'll still be able to hear you from there. He taught them many things, and he said, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell upon the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on the rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants, so that they did not bear grain. Still others fell on good soil. It came up, grew, and produced a crop, multiplying 30, 60, or even 100 times. Then Jesus said, those who have ears to hear, let them hear. And you can just imagine, at that point, thousands of people, and Jesus just goes, thank you very much, and sits down. Now, those who've read and heard the story before know that the disciples then come to him a little bit later and go, what was that about? And he explains that the seed is the good news and it's the different ways and different things that it's received. But you can just, I think, imagine the thousands of people on the shore just going, what? What was that? And it's a story that is remembered and it's a story that will have stayed with them and they will have cause to think about it. Jesus used parables in the same way through a load of Mark. And there's more of them that Pete, I guess, will touch on in the next couple of weeks. But when you read a familiar story, and Jesus has told people what it means, I read it again as if I'd not read it before. And I've already been influenced by something that I'll talk to you about in a second. But this story of the seed and the sower, and I think all the way through, having heard that for the first time, you know, years ago, I would have got the idea that the seed is the good news, and that's fine. But I would have also got the idea that the sower is perhaps something to do with me, something to do with us. You know, we are sowing the good news of Jesus. We are living our lives. We are sometimes talking about this stuff. What is it? Preach at all times and sometimes use words. We are spreading the good news by the things that we do, by the people that we are, and by the words that we say. But I'd always just assumed that the sower was something to do with me. And the frustration of people not listening, people not getting it, people going at it for a little while and then dying away. But what I hadn't really figured was that in actual fact, maybe Jesus was telling the story about his experience. That he had this experience of, look, I'm telling you this good stuff. And he had people ignore him, people decide it wasn't for them, decided it was for them, but then dying away. But it wasn't just the disciples and the followers that he was telling this story to. He was relaying a story about himself. Now, I find that monumentally encouraging, the fact that Jesus, the Son of God, was frustrated that people weren't listening to him. If you wanted somebody, I don't know, just pick a person to tell the whole world about God. The Son of God? That would be the person that you would choose. But when Jesus is talking about the sower, he's actually talking a little bit about himself. Ah, beautiful. So he's not just talking about our experiences, he's talking about his own. So the frustration and the... Well, we were talking a second ago, there was a prayer about the truth. If you feel that you have a hold on the truth, and that the people that you love and the people that you care for don't necessarily want to grasp that, that's really frustrating. But it's kind of encouraging that Jesus felt that same frustration as well. The last bit, though, I can just imagine him doing this. So he's in the boat. I guess some of the other disciples are sat at the boat so to make sure it doesn't drift away. They've anchored it, maybe, but they're with him. And I can just imagine him doing this. And maybe he's doing this to you. Some fell on rocky places. Some fell on shallow soil. Some fell among thorns. Still other seed fell on good soil. And it came up and it grew 30, 60, 100 times. Now, how magic is that? Just imagine Jesus saying that to you. There's all this seed that I've been scattering, all this good news that I've been scattering, and sometimes it falls on good soil. And it multiplies 30, 60, 100 times. And he's pointing at you. He's looking at you. He's looking through you. He's looking into your eyes. And sometimes the seed falls on good soil. And it grows 30, 60, 100 times. Now, maybe when the disciples figured out what he was talking about later, they had that, oh, that was me. That was me he was talking about. That's amazing. I'm good soil. When he was pointing at us, when he was looking at us, I'm good soil. And that whole idea of Jesus being frustrated at the other stuff, but overjoyed when the word, the seed, finds good soil. God is overjoyed. Jesus is overjoyed by your response. Overjoyed by your response. That's pretty good. Now, I want to just do another story, which I think, again, speaks of Jesus' frustration. Now, in order to do this, this isn't quite going to be, what's paper folding called? Origami. It's not quite going to be origami. But I just do need to do some little bit of cutting. Now, this isn't going to be to scale. And it's probably going to be quite badly done. But I just wanted to lay something out in the middle of the church here, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Now, I can try and describe this. The people who can definitely see this are going to have a little bit of an advantage to people who are sitting far over there and far over there. But you know what? You could have a bit of sneaky look. This, from where I'm standing, is a map of the Old Testament area. So if I just point out some bits. Here is the Sea of Galilee. Here is the River Jordan. Here is the Dead Sea. Here is Jerusalem, Nazareth, and then a little city, a little town, a little village, really, called Capernaum. Now, Jesus' hometown ended up being Nazareth. That was where Joseph and Mary were based. And I'm guessing that when Jesus got to be 30, which was the age you had to be to start doing rabbi stuff, I guess he felt a calling from God that he needed to be in Jerusalem. So you can track through the book of Mark, and if you draw his little where he must have been and where he went from to, it seems very much as if he was heading towards Jerusalem. So he's starting out in Nazareth, and he's trying to head south. Now, the easiest way to head south is actually go towards the Jordan and follow the riverbank, because there's a load of mountains in the middle. Judah, Samaria, Galilee, and then some other bits and pieces which change names all the time. Jerusalem was in Judah. Nazareth was in Galilee. Not a good plan to go through Samaria because the people from Judah didn't like the people from Samaria. So Jesus would have walked towards the Jordan. And about 20, 30 miles north of the Dead Sea. That was where he met with John the Baptist, and John the Baptist baptized him in the Jordan. Started to kick up a bit of a fuss. Jesus started to make a name for himself. John the Baptist already had a name for himself. And John the Baptist was then arrested. So Jesus, who at that point didn't have particularly followers, it was just him, I think, decided to head north. Went up the Jordan, around the outside of the Sea of Galilee, and ended up in a town, a village, called Capernaum. Now, Capernaum was on the border of about three different countries. So I imagine he didn't want to go out of Galilee, but he was definitely running from stuff. So the idea actually was that he was almost a refugee from Judea into Galilee. So he'd gone from Nazareth, heading towards Jerusalem, but had had to turn back, I think, because of fear of what had happened to John the Baptist. When he reached Capernaum, that was where he met Peter, Andrew, James, John, and Matthew. Now, it may well be that Matthew's little tax booth was on the border into the next country. And if you brought goods from one country to another, you had to pay tax at a little tax booth. So Peter, Andrew, James, John, Matthew, and potentially a few of the others, Jesus met them around Capernaum. Now, I started to wonder whether this was a surprise to Jesus. Headed toward Jerusalem, 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 Jerusalem. Oh, my word, let's go. And then to start collecting people, his disciples, in this little known, unheard of place called Capernaum. Capernaum is the first place that he did anything in a synagogue. Now, when it says in the Bible, synagogue, you just have a vision of this thing with columns and big, huge building in the middle of Jerusalem. But this would have been a synagogue in this tiny little pokey town village called Capernaum. It would have all likelihood been just an ordinary building with an ordinary roof that just happened to have been turned into a synagogue. Maybe it was a nicer place than that, but it was a pokey little town, pokey little village. So Jesus, Capernaum. Now I wonder whether Jesus felt disappointed in all this. I wonder whether, in his mind, when he first worked out that he had to go to Jerusalem, that he was going to stand up in front of people and tell people how it was, I just wonder whether he was actually disappointed at having to do that in Capernaum. I wonder whether he thought, right, here we go, journey to Jerusalem, head to the temple, God will look after me, it'll be great. And I wonder if he viewed Capernaum as a setback. Now, this is a bit of a shame for all the disciples. I wonder if the disciples that Jesus chose, he chose on a, well, I suppose I better choose some people then. Who is there? A couple of fishermen and a tax collector. I suppose I need to have them. There isn't anybody else. I wonder whether this whole Capernaum thing for Jesus was a setback. I just wonder. What I do know is that Capernaum is viewed massively significantly now by people who read the Bible. People who go on touristy things to Israel and the Holy Land, they make a special journey to Capernaum. Capernaum is the site of a load of miracles. It's where all the disciples came from. It's where Peter's house is. Capernaum has become a very, very special place. So despite the fact that Capernaum maybe was a setback, Jesus made it wonderful. Despite Capernaum maybe being a disappointment, Jesus made it fabulous. And I wondered then for myself, what are my Capernaums? Are there things in my life that I've just kind of settled for? Or I'm a bit disappointed with, or it didn't quite turn out how I'd hoped. I can either go, or I can do what Jesus did and make this Capernaum a wonderful thing. Make this Capernaum a thing that is to be treasured and thought about with fondness. So in your life, in my life, I'm not going to ask too many probing questions or anything from you, but I just consider, are there things in your life, relationships, jobs, friendships, financial situations, I don't know, but are there situations that you actually think, well, that didn't work out? Because I think that was how Jesus felt. And if you are caught in that place of, well, that didn't work out, there's the human choice. I just moan about it. Or there's the Jesus choice. And the Jesus choice seems to me to, with God's help, to make the very, 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 very best of that play, of that place you find yourself. Just recently, and I can't remember which day it was now. Oh, it might have only been yesterday's reading, actually. Mark 8:31-38. Jesus says, I'm going to go to Jerusalem, and I'm going to die. And Peter says, oh, no, you're not. And Jesus says to Peter, get behind me, Satan. That's a big, strong thing to say. And it seems to be that sometimes we don't see things in God's art, with God's eyes. We find ourselves in our Capernaum and we see things with our eyes. We don't necessarily look at them in God's eyes. So I was having a little think about this get behind me Satan thing. And I wondered whether what Jesus was saying was more severely than this. You are thinking human thoughts, not God's thoughts. I was thinking about me. So this is definitely for me, and you could do sentences for yourself. Maybe God sometimes is saying to me, you are not speaking human words. Sorry, no, say that again. Come in again. Here we go. Sometimes God is saying to me, you are speaking human words, not God's words. You are displaying human emotions, not God's emotions. And then these things were definitely for me. You are teaching human lessons, not God's lessons. You are playing human hockey, not God's hockey. You are strumming human chords, not God's chords. And if I find myself doing something that's just human, then maybe that's not always the right thing. So if I find myself in a situation that is my Capernaum, I'm disappointed in where it's turned out, I'm disappointed in how something has happened, I can either treat that in a human way, or I can try to treat that in a God way. Listen for God's words. Look for God's moves. Copy them, use them, live them. I'd urge you to think about your Capernaum. Something in your life that just hasn't quite... You're disappointed in the way that something has worked out. Don't treat it... Well, I say don't treat it as a setback. Realize that it's a setback. But don't treat it as one. Jesus' journey to Jerusalem seemed to have been interrupted. Interrupted in a way that must have been tragic. I hadn't really figured the timeline. But John the Baptist was in prison while Jesus was trying to do his stuff for probably 2 years before he was killed. And the frustration in those days is that there weren't visiting hours for that sort of thing. The idea that your cousin was now locked away, presumably either forever or until somebody lobbed his head off, can't have failed to play on Jesus' mind. So, hello, John. Yes, baptize me. Brilliant. Dove from the sky. Everything is great. Oh, my word. They've arrested him. That must have felt like a setback. So Jesus is trying to march to Jerusalem. He ends up having to turn round and go the other way. How many times in our life do we feel as if we've had to turn round and go the other way? Jesus managed to make Capernaum a place that people think of with fondness. Managed to make Capernaum the place where he found his disciples, where his friends lived. Capernaum presumably treated him as one of their own. What is your Capernaum? And when you've reckoned what it is, listen for God's words. Look for God's moves. Copy them, use them, and live them.